This is Russ Davis. Join me for Jazz America after the latest news on VOA Music Mix.
Four killed in eastern Ukraine in a gun battle, and more confirmed deaths in the South Korean ferry. I'm Marty Johnson reporting from Washington. Reports from East Ukraine say gunmen have attacked a checkpoint manned by pro-Russian separatists, killing at least four people. The early morning attack near the town of Slovyansk could not be immediately confirmed by Ukraine's Interior Ministry. Slovyansk is under the control of pro-Russian militants. The attack comes just hours after the Ukrainian government announced a pause in security operations to oust pro-Russian militants from buildings seized in recent days. The foreign minister linked the suspension to the Eastern holiday and said the pause would also give European monitors time to organize a special mission aimed at de-escalating tensions in eastern Ukraine. The religious values of the Ukraine and Russia are very strong and have played a part that is remaining silent so far. Michael Eccles reports for VOA from Moscow.
About 40% of Orthodox believers in Ukraine are Russian Orthodox. While church leaders of all faiths in Ukraine appear to support the new political leadership in Kyiv, the Russian clergy are keeping silent about recent events. Alexander Soldatov is a Russian journalist who covers religion. The Russian Orthodox Church has yet to take a stance on Ukraine, Soldatov says. The current conflict in Ukraine may be causing a schism between the Russian Orthodox Church and its Ukrainian affiliate. The Russian Orthodox Church, which has close ties to the Russian government, would not comment for this report. If they come out in support of President Putin, their Ukrainian chapter could break off, as Professor Andrei Zubov, an expert on the history of religions, points out. If they support Ukraine, it would cause big problems with the Russian presidential administration. Michael Eccles for VOA News, Moscow.
South Korean divers have entered the sunken ferry to recover more bodies as the number of known dead reached 56 with 246 still unaccounted for. Hundreds of divers, including civilian volunteers, are battling strong undercurrents and poor visibility to enter the submerged ferry, which went down on Wednesday with 476 people, mostly high school students, on board. The Coast Guard said divers were first able to smash through a ship's window late Saturday to recover the first bodies. In what is expected to be a long and grim operation, there are only 174 known survivors, with no one rescued since Wednesday. Authorities have now confirmed the ship's captain was in his quarters when the ship sank, leaving the inexperienced 26-year-old third mate at the helm. The captain, the third mate, and one other crew member were arrested yesterday. President Barack Obama begins a week-long trip to Asia on Tuesday. VOA White House correspondent Luis Ramirez reports.
China is not on the itinerary, but with its efforts to control parts of the East and South China Sea, Beijing is on the minds of Mr. Obama and allies he is visiting. U.S. military cuts are making regional partners nervous about Washington's commitments to defend them. Analyst Bruce Klingner.
I'm confident President Obama will give bold rhetoric reassuring our allies that we can still run as fast and jump as high. But whether they believe that will be the other issue. But our allies, like our opponents, can read a budget balance sheet just as easily as the rest of us in Washington can.
President Obama will stop in Japan, Malaysia, and the Philippines, nations that have ongoing territorial disputes with China. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, at the White House.
Islamic extremists are claiming responsibility for a bombing in Nigeria's capital of Abuja that killed 75 people last Monday. In a video message, the leader of Boko Haram taunted authorities and claimed to be living somewhere in the capital. Meantime, Nigerian authorities are still searching for 85 schoolgirls abducted from a secondary school last week. Officials say 44 other girls escaped from the kidnappers. There have been no claims of responsibility in the kidnapping. Syria has removed or destroyed 80% of its declared weapons material. Sigrid Kaag, who is the special coordinator of the joint mission of the United Nations and the Organization for Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, said if momentum is sustained, Syria should meet the deadline set by the OPCW for destroying weapons before the end of April. Christians around the world are celebrating Easter today, the day they believe Jesus was resurrected from the dead. It is the holiest day of the Christian calendar. Pope Francis celebrated Easter Mass as thousands of faithful gathered in Vatican City's St. Peter's Square. British royalty, the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge, attended Easter service in Australia, and worshippers gathered last night in Bethlehem for the traditional vigil at the Church of the Nativity. This is VOA.
This is Russ Davis. Welcome to another edition of Jazz America as we continue our month-long celebration of Jazz Appreciation Month in the month of April. The theme this week is The Great Migration. Jazz began in New Orleans, Louisiana, and spread to the four corners of the USA. That's our topic this week. Yes, jazz began in New Orleans, and if you joined us last week, then you know we covered every aspect of the music that sprang from the place they call the Big Easy, the Crescent City, right there at the bottom of the United States of America in the Mississippi River Delta. Well, up the Mississippi, jazz migrated, and it eventually ended up in places like St. Louis and in the center of the United States, Kansas City, and then all the way up to Chicago. But I don't want to get ahead of myself. Let's begin down in the Southland. Now, by many accounts, the first jazz song, quote-unquote, was St. Louis Blues, written by the man from Florence, Alabama, W.C. Handy. But before we get to St. Louis, let's go to Memphis as we begin our migration of jazz history with music from a lady who was born in Memphis, Tennessee. Her name, Dee Dee Bridgewater. From her album, Eleanor of Fagan, 1915 to 1959, to Billy with Love, her salute to Billie Holiday, here's Lady Sings the Blues to begin this edition of VOA's Jazz America in Jazz Appreciation Month, the month of April, as we celebrate the great jazz migration.
So sad, wants the world to know just what the blues is all about. Lady sings the blues, she tells her side, nothing to hide. Now the world will know just what the blues is all about.
Well, the blues ain't nothing but a pain in your heart. When you get a bad start, when you and your man have to part, I ain't gonna sit around and cry no more. I know I won't die because I love him more. Lady sings the blues. She's got them bad. She feels so sad. And now the world will know she's never gonna sing them no more. She's never gonna sing them no more.
Lady sings the blues no more. Lady sings the blues no more. Yeah, yeah. Lady sings the blues no more. Lady sings the blues no more. Lady sings the blues no more. No more, 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 no more. Lady sings the blues no more. No more, no more, no more, no more.
From Houston, Texas, by way of Los Angeles, where they migrated to, that's the Jazz Crusaders. Wilton Felder on tenor sax, Wayne Henderson on the trombone. He wrote that song you just heard called Coon from the album Freedom Sound. Joe Sample on the piano and Styx Hooper on the drums. They made their way from Houston to Los Angeles and made jazz history. And that recording came from their album Freedom Sound, recorded in 1961. They went on to be the kings of funk jazz and jazz fusion. And even though they were obviously in Los Angeles making their name on the album cover for their Pacific Jazz album, Freedom Sound, that you just heard from, they had a big map of the state of Texas on it. So they were the Jazz Crusaders and proud to be from Texas. Another gentleman who was born in Texas, Galveston to be specific, born on the 2nd of April in this month of April, Jazz Appreciation Month, Larry Coryell, the great guitarist. Now, his family moved to Seattle, Washington when he was young. It's where he learned a lot of his musical lessons and made his contacts and certainly made a name for himself on the West Coast before moving to New York City and to super jazz stardom. But he got his actual literal beginnings down in South Texas. So the migration of jazz from New Orleans to Texas, as we're enjoying right now. And let's talk to Larry Coryell and hear some of his great work from the 1970s here on VOA's Jazz America.
You know, I've asked this question of a few folks, but they have to have enough years under their belt to be able to really answer it well. And sometimes people just beg off and say, no, it's impossible. So if you beg off, it's okay. If you had a one-night stand, a concert made in heaven, people living and gone, an all-star band that you could call out, a drummer, a bassist, a trumpeter, a saxophonist, a flutist if you want to, a keyboardist, who would you put in that band for that one-night stand?
Okay, the rhythm section would be Terry Lynn Carrington on drums.
Wow.
Buster Williams on bass.
Wow.
Herbie Hancock on piano.
Wow.
Nestor Torres on flute. I got to go for Steve Marcus on tenor.
All right.
Who else? What else?
Trumpet?
Randy. Randy's my man.
Oh, I know. I love him.
Absolute greatest.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. Anybody?
I mean, it was either Steve Marcus or Mike Brecker, you know.
Yeah, man.
Or Wayne.
Yeah.
That's a tough one, but who did I say? Steve Marcus?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I miss him.
That was your first one. That was your first choice.
I miss him.
Yeah.
Violin?
Just top the wall.
Rapelli.
Yeah, man. Gotcha.
There was nobody who could play like him.
Wow. Great.
Well, thank you for doing that. That's a fun exercise.
with one of the members of his all-star dream band, Randy Brecker, on the trumpet. That is Larry Coryell and some jazz fusion era history from his early 1970s release. Introducing The 11th House with Larry Coryell, the song Bird Fingers. By the way, we wish a very happy 71st birthday on the 2nd of April to Larry Coryell, born in Galveston, Texas. And now a little bit more of that jazz migration that began down in the southern part of the United States, and we're saluting the state of Texas at this point. There is a famous group of tenor saxophone players who hailed from Texas who were known as the Texas Tenors. Arnett Cobb, Buddy Tate, David Fathead Newman, King Curtis, and a gentleman with an interesting name, Illinois Jacquette. No, he was not from Illinois. He was from Houston. And here's Illinois Jacquette from 1946 with his classic song, Illinois Goes to Chicago, on Jazz America from the VOA Music Mix Network.
April is Jazz Appreciation Month. And did you know that jazz represents the cultural heritage of the United States? It has its roots in the blues and ragtime and then swing, bebop, and beyond. There's so much to learn and so much to love. So celebrate this glorious music called jazz. Go to a jazz concert. Explore a new era or musician. Learn how to dance to jazz. But whatever you do, this month and every month, enjoy jazz. Born in America, enjoy it worldwide.
The Great Jazz Migration. That is the theme of this edition of VOA's Jazz America, jazz born in New Orleans and then migrating all through the United States of America. And you may not have ever thought that Texas, the state of Texas, might have been the birthplace of so many jazz greats. Well, you just heard from another one, young trumpeter from Houston, Roy Hargrove, in the title cut from his album, The Vibe. And he wished you a very happy April Jazz Appreciation Month. This is Russ Davis, and we're going to head up the river a little bit further and give you a little stop in a place called East St. Louis. But first, I want to invite you to get in touch with me by email. It's very simple. I'll give you the email address to which you can write with your questions, comments, or requests for music. Here's the address, jazzamerica@voanews.com. That's Jazz America, the two words written as one word, @ voanews.com. jazzamerica@voanews.com. And here's a message I've received from Robert Nisabiyumva, and he writes the following. Hey, Russ, once again, talking of reality, jazz has become my only favorite music ever, and I'm always tuned in for jazz on Saturday. Please, Russ, could you play me one from Miles Davis? It's my pleasure. And please, Russ, I want to know the history of jazz because I don't know really where it comes from, and more to that, when Miles started playing. I'm so curious. Well, Robert, thank you very much. I hope you've been listening the last couple of weeks as we've given you a little bit of a jazz history lesson, and it continues today, so you're learning more about how it was born in New Orleans and then moved all over the United States in the Great Jazz Migration. It moved up the Mississippi River, and we're headed on our way to Chicago, but we're going to make a stop along the way right now to play you some Miles Davis. And to be very brief about the incredible story that is Miles Davis's life and career, he was born in Illinois, and his family moved to East St. Louis, Illinois, just across the river, the Mississippi, from St. Louis, Missouri. And there, as well as in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, where his family owned a large plantation, he first got into music listening to gospel music in the church. Then, when he was very young, his mother wanted him to play piano, but his father gave him a trumpet. And he started playing that, taking lessons locally in East St. Louis, Illinois, and started playing professionally as a teenager. He almost didn't finish high school, but his mother demanded that he did. In 1944, when he was just a teenager, Billy Eckstein's band came to town. Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker were part of that band, and he actually sat in with them when the trumpet player was ill. So as a teenager, he got his first big break, and he went on from there to move finally to New York City and then become an international jazz star of the highest order. Well, here's some Miles Davis for you, Robert. Hope you enjoy it. One of his classic tunes to begin this set of music as we enjoy the Great Jazz Migration up the Mississippi River with this little stop in St. Louis. Miles Davis on VOA's Jazz America.
Thank you. Hi, this is Pat Metheny. Did you know that April is Jazz Appreciation Month? Did you know that jazz represents the cultural heritage of the United States? It has its roots in the blues and ragtime, and then swing, bebop, contemporary, and beyond. So celebrate this glorious music called jazz. Go to a jazz concert. Explore a new era or musician. Pick up an instrument and make your own form of jazz. But most of all, just enjoy jazz, born in America, enjoyed around the world.
Thank you.
Jazz, we've been charting the great migration of jazz from New Orleans up the Mississippi River through the Midwestern part of the United States of America. We've given you a quick survey of some of the Midwest's finest players ever. You just heard Pat Metheny, who hails just to the west of Miles Davis's hometown of East St. Louis, Illinois, in the Kansas City suburb of Lee's Summit, Missouri. That's Pat Metheny's hometown, and you just heard Pat Metheny from the Trio 99-2000 release, with Larry Grenadier and Bill Stewart joining him in a trio with Pat Metheny's song Go Get It. And, of course, Kansas City, the hometown of one Charlie Parker. So you see the Midwest filled with fantastic musicians. Preceding that, we heard the man who was born in the Evansville, Indiana area, the southern part of Indiana, just to the east of East St. Louis, Illinois, the hometown of Miles Davis. That was Gary Burton with his new Gary Burton Quartet and the song The Lookout from Common Ground, their latest release. And, of course, it was a title cut from Miles Davis's classic work from 1958, Milestones. He was joined by Cannonball Adderley, John Coltrane, Red Garland, Paul Chambers and Philly Joe Jones, one of the greatest bands that jazz has ever produced. And, of course, once again, Miles Davis hailed from the Midwestern part of the United States, right in the center on that Mississippi River. Now, as the jazz migration progressed, eventually Chicago became a major center for the music for many reasons. Everyone from Louis Armstrong to the great Delta blues man Robert Johnson made their way to Chicago because that's where the money was. That's where the jobs were. That's where the people could come out and hear the music in large numbers and pay you for playing. Well, born and raised in Chicago is the great Herbie Hancock, who's another of those jazz greats with a birthday, his 74th. In this month of April, Jazz Appreciation Month. Let's hear from Herbie Hancock, his words followed by his music here on VOA's Jazz America.
Let me talk just a little bit about how I got started in music. First of all, when I was 6 years old, my mother noticed that every time I would go over to my best friend's apartment, you know, we lived in an apartment building in Chicago on the South Side, you know, a poor neighborhood. And actually, the poorest people lived in the basement because, you know, there'd be 10 people in one room, you know. But at least we had four or five rooms. And we lived on the first floor, so we weren't quite as poor as the people in the basement, you know. But we weren't that much above that, you know. We were pretty poor. My mother noticed that I would go to my friend Levester's house, and every time I would go there, I would always ask, can I play your piano? Well, of course, I couldn't play the piano. I didn't know anything about playing the piano. And I, to this day, I have no idea what I did. You know, maybe I did the, you know, that you do with your knuckles, you know. Or maybe somebody taught me chopsticks or something. I don't remember. That was a long time ago. Yeah. So, on my 7th birthday, my parents bought me a piano because they liked the fact that I was interested in something that was cultural. I mean, they probably had no idea that eventually I would wind up being a musician. And they probably, at that time, if they had known that I would pursue music, they probably would have got me something else besides a piano. You know, maybe a calculator or something, I don't know.
Thank goodness it was the keyboard and not the calculator for Herbie Hancock, for all of our benefit. Here's his classic song from the album Empyrean Isles from 1964, Cantaloupe Island, with Freddie Hubbard, Ron Carter, and Tony Williams joining him. Herbie Hancock on Jazz America from the VOA Music Mix Network. the man from Chicago, Herbie Hancock, and we'll head to the West and to the East, New York and Los Angeles, coming up next hour on Jazz America.